All right, I will call the meeting of the Retirement Committee to order. It's Tuesday, October 28th, here in Conference Room C2. Can I do a roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Wygant.
Here.
Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Yao. Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Green. Director Jung.
Director Jung is here.
Director Tran.
Yes.
Director Sheldon. Director Meeks.
Here.
Director Villadeau.
Present at Civic Center, Santa Ana.
Jason Dadakis.
Here.
Kevin O'Toole.
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Okay, great. Are there any items received too late to be agendized? Okay, perfect. Now is the time for visitor participation. Is anyone wishing to address the committee? Seeing no hands. Okay, all right. We'll move on to our consent calendar, which is item number one, the minutes of the committee from September 23rd.
So moved.
All right. Do I have a second? I will second. Any conversation? Nope. Seeing none, I will call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Wygant.
Yes.
Director Amezcua.
Yes.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Jason Dadakis.
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole.
Yes.
And that motion carries with 5 yes votes.
All right. Now on for matters of consideration. Item two is 457B Deferred Compensation Plan Investment Lineup Review and 401A Money Purchase Retirement Plan Red Flag Fund Review. Not taking,
Yeah, so
Okay.
we'll give it to Scott to take it away.
All right.
Thank you so much, everybody. Appreciate you taking time this afternoon. So we have our normal quarterly 457 full review, our normal 401A red flag review to cover today. So looking forward to digging into this with you. I'm going to start with the minutes from July's meeting. So coming into July 22nd, no red flags in the money purchase plan, one red flag in the 457 plan. That is the AllianceBernstein Large Growth. It was red flagged in January of this year. So that was the second review of its red flag status. Today will be the third. Our investment policy statement says these funds have 2 to 4 quarters to show signs of improvement. So we'll have to keep that in mind today as we review its recent performance. We started then, as we do now, reviewing the meeting minutes, market economic review covering how the markets have done the first half of this year, which will give a three-quarter version today. And then the fund additions, no changes to the 401A plan. In the 457B plan, we did add a new natural resources, fidelity, water sustainability fund. So this is water industry-focused corporations. And then on the 401A plan, no actual red flags, but the share class changes. Here were opportunities to become more efficient in terms of our share classes. As you might remember, all revenue sharing from any funds is refunded to the plan participants. So it's our duty as the consultants to review all the funds to make sure we're using the most fee-efficient versions. Occasionally, mutual funds change their fee arrangements by prospectus, so we detect those and report them to the committee. So at the bottom of that page, for low price stock change to low price stock K6 shares. So same manager, same funds, lower expense ratio. The Janus Henderson Enterprise, which is your mid-growth fund, changed from the N to the T shares. And then on to the 457B. The Virtus and Phelps was pulled out as an underperformer in the water category. Water, the Philly Water Flows we mentioned just came in, has my favorite symbol so far, FLLWX. And then we still have AB Large is on the red flag, as we've mentioned. There were also 2 share class changes, both Janus Henderson funds. The Enterprise went from the N to the T, the I went to the T, so we're most fee efficient with the Janus funds now. All the other funds meeting or exceeding their benchmarks. The plan balance just under $200 million for the 401A. The average account balance $553,000. Loan balance as of June, 1.1 million borrowed by 63 participants. Average loan $17,600. Reported to the committee that the money that's remained in the Empower Guaranteed Income Fund, the old Prudential GIF, will be mapping to the Vanguard Money Market. That is actually happening on Friday, everybody. So November 1st, a Saturday, is happening on Halloween. There will be no more Empower GIF in our plan. Target date funds. So we did review all of those and we covered those. Those are options in the 401A, but not the 457. Any questions about the minutes before I proceed? All right, so let's go through these numbers. These are October's report with September's numbers. So these would tie up to your quarterly statement. So after a very difficult March and April, we've had a pretty healthy market for both stocks and bonds so far this year. If you look at the initial benchmarks, they're at the top. Those are your equity benchmarks. The three best known indexes are at the top. The Dow is up about 10.5% for the year. The NASDAQ up about 18%. The S&P up 14.8%. If you look at the battle between growth and value, growth has been winning generally the last 5 to 7 years, but it's pretty close this year. Russell 1000 growth up 17, the value up about 11, and mid-caps a little bit closer, up 13 and 10. In small stocks, where the performance has all been in the third quarter, you can see the growth up about 11, the value up about 9. But please note quarter-to-date numbers, which is going to be July, August, and September, that the Russell 2000 was up 12% and only up 10% for the year. So that was the one category in equities in the U.S. that was losing money through the second quarter. Small stocks are most impacted by higher interest rates. They're more excited about the Fed rate cuts because they do have to go to the banking or private credit businesses to get lending. And while the larger company stocks borrowed during COVID by selling billions of dollars in bonds when interest rates were at their cyclical lows, the smaller companies are impacted more by tariffs and more by higher interest rates. The big winners this year, however, have been the overseas companies towards the bottom of that section, EAFE, Europe, Africa, and the Far East. International stocks benefiting from the weak dollar. The U.S. dollar has lost 9% of its purchasing power this year, which means if you have money invested overseas, when it comes back home to U.S. dollars, it's buying more dollars. So you got about a 15, 16% gain in those international stocks. You add on about a 9 or 10% gain from the dollar. That's your 25% gain in the first three quarters from that benchmark. And then emerging markets have been the biggest winners. So China, India, Turkey, Mexico, et cetera, also benefiting from the current environment, up about 28% this year. So the bond market's the next section, a lot of different bond benchmarks. The Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index includes corporate, high-grade corporates, and treasuries. So I've been beating the drum on that as an investment for 2 years now versus fixed accounts. So that's up 6% in the first three quarters of the year, so I'm pretty happy about that. The rally has continued into October, so most bond funds are at a two-year high right now. If you look at Treasury bills, up 3.25% for the year. Last year, the Treasury on the 90-day Treasury was about a 5% yield. Now it's closer to a 4% yield. We are expecting the Fed to cut interest rates again tomorrow. That would take most money market rates down to 3.75%. A December rate cut is also a 97% expectation of one more cut, which would take money market rates closer to 3.5%. So we had four cuts last year. So far, one cut, about to be two cuts this year, a third cut before the end of the year along the meeting dates of the Fed. The next section, Bloomberg Commodities. Commodities had a pretty decent year. Best winners this year have been gold and silver, but all commodities averaging a 9.3% gain so far this year. On this page here, the S&P index sectors, so there's 11 sectors in the S&P 500. The numbers in purple are telling you what they've done in the year to date. So that's the first three quarters of the year. Numbers in orange are what they did in the month of September. So you do have negative returns from energy, consumer staples, and materials during the month of September, but everything is in the positive, in the black for the year, or are the purple lines. Underperformance have been things that are more economically sensitive. So you see that healthcare, actually less economically sensitive, I should say. Healthcare has struggled until recently. A couple of their big index stocks, United Healthcare and Eli Lilly, have had tough years. Real estate has suffered a bit from the higher interest rates. And then energy has flipped back and forth, but it is positive for the year. Consumer staples, things that we buy every day, like things from Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, it's also been a bit of a struggle as you've seen inflation still be a problem so far this year. So that's a bit of an update on the overall markets. If there's any questions, please let me know. Otherwise, we will turn to looking at the asset allocation of the 457 plan. The numbers on your screen are percentages, they're not return numbers, but how the assets are allocated. So each category has a number at the top that's telling you the total aggregate balance in that particular category. These top nine categories are domestic equities, values on the left, growth is on the right, blends in the middle, top to bottom, large, mid, small, and then we mix it up a bit more with international and specialty funds. So if a fund is in red, that's a reminder it is our red on our red flag or watch list. So AB large cap growth is represented there in large cap growth. There is one other option there, T. Rowe Price. So T. Rowe has about 4% of the plan. AB has about 5%. So the overall category is 9.5%. In the middle there, typically in the blend categories, is where you have your index funds. So we've offered folks both an active and a passive manager for each. So JP Morgan and Vanguard share the large cap blend category. The principal mid-cap S&P 400 index fund is about 1% of the mid-blend. The active manager is 0.5%. We'll talk a lot about mid-blend today, so keep an eye on that and talk about benchmarks there. And then small-cap blend, principal small-cap S&P 600, and the Fidelity Stock Selectors actively managed. Over to the left, on the value side, those are all active managers, two large growth managers, one mid and one small. Down towards the bottom section there, emerging markets, about 1% of the plan. Again, we saw that was the best performing category year to date. International stocks, just under 5%. As a category, as a specialty category, equity precious metals have gone through the roof this year. So congrats to everybody who's utilizing that. Very volatile category, but in many cases up 100% on the year. So some very positive returns there. That is now 7.5% of the 457 plan. Below that, real estate, which we know is having kind of a muted year, is 0.5%. That water sustainability fund, and that change is official on November 7th. So if you're still seeing the old Burtis fund in there, that's because the change, Fidelity has already processed everything, but the actual trades will happen November 7th. Back to the bottom left, we have a healthcare fund. Healthcare, again, a tougher year so far. And then technology, again, among the leaders, as many of the big cap tech names leading the market still. As we get to the bottom section in the middle, we have funds that have both stocks and bonds combined. So a traditional balance fund from Janus. And then those Fidelity Asset Managers, where each one of the funds sets a percentage in terms of what they have in stocks versus what they have in bonds. So if it's the 85% fund, it's going to be 85% in stocks. This continues on to page 24. So here's our fixed income category. On the upper left, we're going to go from three choices to two at the end of the week. So Empower's money will all map into Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund. So we'll be over 20% of the plan in the money market fund. And then the brand new Invesco Stable Value, which started in May, is going to be another option. It'll be interesting with the Fed cutting rates that we won't be far until Invesco's rate is going to actually be better than the money market. So I think we timed that pretty well in terms of an addition to now give participants an option to choose between the two. Traditional bonds are in the middle of those boxes. Dodge & Cox Income, iShares is the index fund, so about 8% of the plan overall, again, up 6% in the first three quarters of the year. A government treasury inflation-protected bonds above that, BlackRock, is about 0.5%. And then a high yield fund or no, or non-investment grade credit fund, PGIM High Yield, is in the bottom left, which is 1.4%. So that's how the money is allocated in the 457. A reminder, we have two different lineups between the two plans. There are a few funds that cross over, which we try to remind you of when we come to those. This is asset diversification. So listed from highest risk to lowest risk is all the categories here. The boxes are referring to ongoing fund changes. So the Burtis, Duff & Phelps is being merged into Fidelity, Janus into Janus, et cetera, et cetera. On the left-hand side, their number, the Morningstar categories listed to the right of that, the fund name, the symbol, the date it was added to the plan. Some of these have been there for a long time. Some of them are newer. The assets as of the end of the third quarter, what percentage of the overall plan that represents, and then in bold, how many participants, current or former employees of Orange County Water District, have money in those funds. We also list in green by dollars the five biggest holdings in your plan. So the Vanguard Federal Money Market is number one at $8.7 million. Number two comes the Vanguard 500, which is 14.6% or 7 million. Number three is that gold fund with some serious appreciation this year, 3.6 million. The AB large cap growth, which is on red flag, is number four. So keep that in mind at 2.4 million. And then its partner in the same category, which has been the hottest category going for a while now, number five in T. Rowe Price at 2.1 million.
Scott, has the gold fund reached number three based on, like you said, the appreciation of the assets as opposed to more employees participating?
There has been some serious flow in there, but the biggest reason it moved up the list is the gains it's made this year. So,
Because I just, I
we
don't
can
recall.
document the difference between the two. No, it's never been the top five that I recall.
Right.
Yeah, that's a new thing. So as a reminder, we refund all the revenue sharing where applicable back to the participants. Where the expense ratios are listed there, EXP ratio, that's telling you the prospectus expense ratio that's determined by the board of the fund. And if there's any revenue sharing, it's listed to the right of that. So the net expense ratio is to the right of that because that revenue sharing is refunded to the participants that hold balances in that fund. On the far right is the category average expense ratio. So you're benchmarking it versus the category average is determined by Morningstar, so you get an idea where we fall in terms of expenses. So page one continues into page two. This plan's at $48 million total, 296%, new 296 participants. Remember, this is the voluntary plan. This is also the plan where you have the option to make Roth contributions and where the district matches. Any questions for me on what you've seen so far? We all have a decision sheet. If you printed your book out, then we can keep track of all our decisions today, along with our help board secretary. So we have on items for review for the 457, five funds to look at, four in the 401A, and then the rest of the 457 plan is on items for consent. All right, everybody ready to dig in? So, in the 457 plan, we have a health sciences fund. We know the category as a whole has underperformed a bit. T. Rowe Price has been a good fund for many years, but under a bit of a struggle of late. Morningstar still has a very high valuation of the fund, 4 stars out of five, and then silver, which is their second best qualitative rating. So, gold, silver, bronze, neutral, and negative. Manager team's been there 9 years, and those 9 years they've done well. They've beat 70% of their peers, but in the last 3 years they've struggled down to the bottom 25%. If you look at the chart here, you see it's just under 1% of the overall plan. There are 40 participants in the fund. The 5-year chart looks ideal where it's beating the benchmark with less risk. It had a good 2021, 2022. Not a great 23, a good 24, but you see it's really struggling so far this year. So we have an underperformer on the last 3 years of about 1.5% versus the Morningstar Healthcare benchmark. We go a little bit further into short-term performance. You'll see a 6 and 12-month chart where the underperformance is a bit more dire. So it's underperformed the last 6 months by about 7%. And the last 12 months by about 6%. Healthcare has had a tough year. As you know, UnitedHealthcare has been in the headlines. That is the biggest part of that benchmark. Not only was the CEO assassinated, but there's quite a few fraud investigations going through at UnitedHealth. Their stock dropped about 60% at one point. The GLP makers, GLP-1 makers, Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, those folks that are taking Ozempic or similar medications for weight loss. Those were the hottest thing going last year. They've had a bit more of a struggle this year as growth rates have leveled off, and there's more negative feedback to some people's reactions to those drugs. So the stocks have cooled a bit, even though those two businesses are frantically building more factories to make more of their pharmaceutical. On the second chart, you notice a little bit different version of the style boxes. This is showing the drift of the style. The smaller symbols are furthest back in time, back 3 years. The bigger ones are more recent. So you can see as a category, the benchmark has become and the fund has become a little bit more large cap and a little bit more value oriented, whereas at times it was mid cap or small cap more on the growth side. So first question for the committee is, do we want to red flag this fund or gray flag it if we want to make it less official? The next question would be, do we want to consider other alternatives to potentially replace it?
I'd like to red flag it, given its recent performance and the fact that I'm concerned that we wait and the performance continues, that best year is 21, and that's going to start rolling off in the current year. So I think it's worth red flagging out.
Agreed. That's wise. Anybody at the point where they want to look at changes or stick to our normal process to flag the fund? Give it time to improve.
Yeah, along those lines, I did kind of looking at the alternatives, looking at the recent performance of what you provided here on page 32. It looks like all the alternatives are underperforming the benchmark recently.
Yeah. Everybody's struggling.
So I think with that in mind, there's some funds that have performed well historically, but the game has changed so much, it seems like, recently. It might be prudent for us to red flag and circle back for alternatives.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I wrote notes to myself on the 6 and 12 month. There's nothing good here. So the funds that kind of stuck with their winners of previous years really kind of got burned so far this year. Okay, so everybody okay with, we do a vote at the end, Director?
Yeah. So I think just to add my 2 cents, I think healthcare is something we should be looking into, though, for the future. I think there's a lot of baby boomers that are going to rely on healthcare. So got to keep something in that realm. It's just a matter of finding what exactly that is. But I think, you know, there's going to be some plays here in the future for healthcare that I think it's important to be invested in. But right now it's just a tough period of time, but I would see at some point some improvements because a lot of people are going to rely on health care as they go.
I certainly agree with that. Okay. These are our morning stars for reference. Okay, specialty natural resources. There are no flags here. We're showing you in blue the new fund versus the leaving fund, the parting fund in red. Again, that's happened on November 7th. So usually when you're talking about this category of natural resources, you're referring to energy, oil and gas, that kind of stuff, could be metals and mining. But in this particular case, I asked my team to do a little bit of homework just to see how the water industry fund, which is a much smaller section, is doing versus the rest of natural resources. So Morningstar has one category for all of those and just seeing if we were missing anything. So if you look at the two funds that are focused on the water industry on this particular chart here, our new fund is the best performer of all of them. Certainly an improvement over the Virtus Stuff and Phelps Water Fund. And on the three-year numbers, the Natural Resources Fund's not doing quite as well. But you flip that on its ear if you look at the five-year numbers. And the five-year numbers where oil and gas really benefited in the recovery from COVID when suddenly people started flying and driving again. And they had huge years from their energy stocks in 21 and 22. But I was wondering if there was anything out there in the sense that we're missing out. We do have this Fidelity Global commodity stock in orange. It's in orange to remind us it's in the other plan. But here I thought that we were pretty good in terms of offering. I mean, the question is, do we need a water fund anyway? No offense to the water company I'm representing here. But the idea was, were we missing anything? I think we've got the right thing. And then to offer a global commodity fund as well, I think kind of covers when water is doing better than oil or vice versa. So any feedback or thoughts on that, what we're talking about today?
So adding to the portfolio, this global commodity.
That was already in there.
Oh, okay.
So I was just saying, is there anything that we wanted to do differently looking at those two subcategories together? I can show you on the 3 and 5 year numbers. So our fund in blue definitely has the 2 and 3 year best numbers. But over the longer term, where we have that recovery from COVID, you've got better numbers from the oil and gas section. So water at the bottom here, water at the top here. So it's kind of interesting. So I think for your participants to offer both options gives them the ability to benefit from both cycles, is my thinking. So.
Just to confirm what you said, Scott. We offer this to both to employees. One is via the 457, one is via the 401A.
So the Philly Global Commodity Stock is in the other plan, and you're going to get to look at it in a few minutes. Nice. And I think, when we start talking about the mid-cap index funds, I think that's also a thought process for the committee is, do we like having slightly different but similar funds in the two different plans so people can diversify across two different plans? So not always identical between the two, but similar.
I think, Scott, if we were to bring a second broader fund into this, we'd have to have essentially two benchmarks
Yeah.
for it, which complicates things a little bit. It's almost like they need their own
It
separate categories.
does. And you're about to find out more about benchmarks than you ever wanted to know. So
Yeah.
you're highlighting an interesting point.
I mean, given where we are, I'm okay keeping the water fund as our sole natural resource fund in the 457
Okay.
for now, and then maybe we get through the other more maybe more pressing benchmark discussions, see where that lands, and then
Yeah.
we can always revisit this.
We might sort of create policy through that discussion.
Yeah, and the fact that we're going to be reviewing sounds like the Fidelity Commodity Fund later.
Yep.
I suggest we kind of get through all that and then
Okay. We can always double back.
tackle this later, either maybe those head of the meeting.
That works for me. Okay, so mid-blend index. So we use the principal mid-cap S&P 400 index. The benchmark, according to our investment policy statement here, is the S&P mid-cap 400. So that makes perfect sense. So you notice the blue circle is really right on top of the black diamond. The two are one and the same. That's what we would hope it to be. But since the subject comes up sometimes, we wanted to point out that there are more than one benchmark in this particular category that are used. The Russell Midcap, which is commonly used, also a benchmark in our other plan, the 401A money purchase, is in purple. It's the purple diamond here on the page. So Russell does not require a company to be profitable to be in their benchmark, whereas S&P Standard & Poor's requires you to be a profitable company to be in their benchmark. So, as we've talked about in previous meetings, there are times when Russell looks better, there are times when S&P looks better. Russell looks better in the last 6 months because profitless companies, especially technology profitless companies, have been the big winners. It's probably been a detriment to your business to have profits because you can't claim huge growth rates like some of the profitless tech companies have done. So, as you look at this on the 3-year numbers, Russell is better. On the 5-year numbers, our fund and the S&P MidCap 400 is better. So, I thought it would be an interesting exercise because we've had the same exercise with some other clients to kind of just go through the list of benchmarking and make sure we are comfortable with how we are benchmarking this category and then deciding if we want to benchmark the category of mid-blend differently between the two plans in an effort to create a little bit of diversification there. So, if I switch pages now, I'm looking at the 6 and 12 month, and you can see that that benefits Russell. Again, recently, profitless tech and certainly a lot of companies in the mid-cap category have done better. And then, if I go a little further out and we take the funds out and just look at the three major benchmarks, S&P Mid-Cap 400 is the black diamond, the Russell again is the purple. And now there's the CRSP US Mid Cap Index. Most people probably never heard of that, but this is the benchmark that Vanguard uses. So they use CRSP, and the sizes of the companies in CRSP are far bigger than the sizes of what's in the S&P Mid Cap 400. Again, you're finding out more than you ever wanted to know about mid caps. But the 1-year numbers you can see have been better for the bigger ones. So the best numbers have been from the CRSP, then Russell. If you go down to the 3-year, it's a little closer. Those two are pretty close, but they're beating the S&P 400. If I go out to 5-year, then the S&P is beating those other two benchmarks. If I go out to a 10-year, and that would make sense kind of in a full market cycle, it all comes out in the wash, as they would say. It's about even a little bit less risk from those other two. So it's further to the left because they buy a little bit bigger stocks. So now we remarry these benchmarks with mutual funds that follow them. So the principal mid-cap S&P 400, the BNY Mellon mid-cap index, and the Columbia all are benchmarked to the S&P mid-cap 400. You'll notice there's also the expense ratio and the revenue sharing, so we can revisit whether we have the right one of those. Then there's Vanguard's mid-cap index connected to the CRSP. And then here's Fidelity mid-cap index, iShares Russell mid-cap index, that surprisingly are benchmarked to the Russell mid-cap. So is there anything on here we would want to revisit a little bit? Now, let me remind you just for a second, our 457 plan is benchmarked to the S&P Mid-Cap 400. So were we to change the benchmark we're following and the fund we're using, we'd have to change investment policy statement. The 401A's investment policy statement says we can use either benchmark. I wonder if that may be something we want to dial down to one or the other. So if you look at the 1 year, it's similar to the benchmarks I just showed you with the indexes themselves, CRSP looking the best, much closer on the 3 year. On the 5 year, our fund and our benchmark is the best. On the 10 year, it's about a push. So do we like this benchmark that does require you to be profitable to be a member of the benchmark? I think you see a little bit less volatility at times, but they just don't buy stocks that are quite as big. My notes on that. So yeah, the S&P's average stock in there is about 9.4 billion. In Vanguard's benchmark, the average stock is 41 billion. So you could argue whether that's mid-cap at all. And the Russell is 23 billion. So they're supposed to be mid-cap, which is somewhere between 5 and 10 billion. The other two are much larger. Right now, larger is better, but that won't always be the case. You can see that those cycles flip and flop. I don't think we'd want to have two index funds in the same category because we have a mid-value and a mid-growth already. Do we want to have two different mid-cap blend benchmarks across the two different plans? That would be my question to the
generally think simpler and consistent is better in terms of folks, you know, look, especially if the same, comparing the same fund, it would seem strange to have the same fund in both plans, which I think we do, yet compared to different benchmarks, the two different plans.
Then really to throw you a loop for a loop, do we switch to the Columbia, which has a little bit better, more effective fee efficiency?
So the Columbia is 20 refunding 10.
Yeah. 5 basis point difference.
Whereas the other one is 25 refunding 10.
Yeah. Splitting hairs at this point.
Now, could you give me a little help here? Columbia, eyes aren't that good. Columbia is tracking which one?
So the first three, Principal, BNY Mellon, and Columbia, all track the S&P, the actual benchmark on this page. Then Vanguard and the CRSP are together, and then Fidelity Midcap and iShares are with the Russell Midcap benchmark right below it. So we tried to group them there.
Thank you. Put a lot of information there, Scott. I don't know how to get some of it, and I think one of the pieces I'm struggling with a little bit here is, if I'm looking at this correctly, and I heard you correctly, the Russell benchmark companies do not have to be profitable.
Oh.
And what I'm seeing, if I'm reading this all correctly, is across the 1 year, 3 year, 5 and 10 year, the returns are mixed. I think recently they've been better returns, and that's part of the market. But in all cases, the risk has been lower, which is surprising.
It's because they're bigger. It's the bigger stocks. So that first batch of three that are S&P Mid-Cap 400, the average company size is 9.6 billion. If you go to Vanguard, it's 41 billion, which some people argue is that mid-cap at all. And then if you go to Russell, it's 21 billion.
Okay. So they're
So
getting stability by size.
right. So yes, it's a good point that you would expect more volatility from non-profitable companies, but they just happen to be bigger market cap companies, which fluctuate less. While we're all struggling to figure out what to do here, if you look at the other plan, we use the same fund, but we use a different benchmark.
This guy, is that because we have the flexibility to use either in the 401A?
Yeah, the investment policy statement says we can use either.
Whereas the policy statement for the 457 says we have to use the S&P, right?
It's a bit of a loose end there that I wonder if we should try to close.
Mean, I would suggest given the essentially identical 10-year performance. And the fact that the S&P does appear to be a more of a true mid-cap index, I'd suggest we stick with we benchmark to the S&P in both plans, which sounds like we can under the existing policy statement, and stick with a fund that tracks that index.
That seems to be the simplest and more straightforward.
I like that a lot. I think what would change is that my team would change the benchmark on this slide to the S&P Mid-Cap 400.
Moving forward.
And then you'd look good on all of your comparisons versus that benchmark because it's right on top of it.
And I would think, given that the policy allows that, we could just document that in minutes. So,
Yeah, we'll write some up.
yeah, I think that's the. I would suggest that's the cleanest way to do that. In terms of, and then maybe we revisit the sort of the less expensive alternatives, maybe later, maybe come back almost, it's almost, I mean, it's essentially like it's like a share class efficiency, very similar for when you look at index, right? So yeah, if we can get a better deal for the same index, then I think the committee should be open to it.
And then I thought we might want to, in 2026, revisit the investment policy statement since it's about 5 years old. So we can kind of look at all of that as one focus in a meetings. So it sounds like what we're doing here, for those of you following the decision sheet, is on the 457 item number three, principal mid-cap, that would just be a keep. And then on the 401A item number two, principal mid-cap S&P 400, that would also be a keep.
But then switch the benchmark
But change the benchmark.
as is allowed in the policy.
Anybody feel differently or disagree with that assertion? All right. Thank you, everybody. So back a little bit here to the 457 plan. One more category to visit is large growth. Again, we have two funds here, one of which has been red flagged since January, which is the AB Large Cap Growth AllianceBernstein, and then the T. Rowe Price All Cap Opportunities, the old New America Fund, which has changed its charter. It actually benchmarks itself to the Russell 3000. So we put that as a secondary benchmark on these pages. As a committee, we are benchmarking it to the Russell 1000, which is the 1,000 biggest stocks to the 3,000 biggest stocks. T. Rowe is rated 4 stars out of 5 in gold, so that's a pretty strong rating. Manager has been there almost exactly 10 years. In the last 1 year, they're 66th percentile, so that being the bottom two-thirds. 3 years, 70th percentile. 5 years, 31. 10 years, 14. So the top 20%. Hero tends to be a little bit less aggressive, so they're further to the left. If you notice their style in the bottom right manager style chart, you notice it's almost a blend or almost follows the Russell 3000 exactly because they'll have a mix in there. So there are some value stocks that find their way in there. There are some smaller stocks that find their way in there. But what we have to focus on today is the AB, which is below the benchmark on the last 3 years. It's also below the benchmark on the last 5 years. Same is true for T. Rowe, but T. Rowe is hugging that capital markets line, which is telling us that the risk they take, the less risky approach, is a trade-off, and sometimes that makes sense. Not every committee would agree, but it does to me. But the AB for a bit more risk is not really adding any incremental return. So the T. Rowe has beat its sub-benchmark 4 out of the last 5 years, but our benchmark for it is a Russell 1000 growth, which it hasn't done. So we could take issue with that fund. Why don't we start with AB and see where we land? This is a 3 and 5 year chart. This is a 6 and 12 month chart. It hasn't been a pretty picture. Part of the reason for this is the Russell 1000 growth benchmark. If you look at its components, there are three stocks that represent 36% of it. So those three stocks are more than 10% of the benchmark by themselves. Most funds are not allowed to own any single stock at more than 8 or 10%. So by nature of those three stocks being the biggest and the best, any fund that's an active manager is probably going to underperform. Now, over in the 401A plan, we use an index fund for this category along with an active manager, which happens to be T. Rowe Price. So that kind of gives us a good combination. We could do the similar thing here on the 457 plan, or we could look at other active managers. I kind of like mixing it up a little bit because of how well that benchmark is done and the inevitability at some point it will underperform. But we can certainly, that's one route we could safely go. So I'm switching slides. The alternative in orange, we're reminding the T. Rowe's in both plans. In orange, we're reminding you the other plan has a fairly large cap growth index fund, which is why it's on top of the benchmark because it tracks that benchmark exactly. There's also active managers to consider, probably growth discovery, JP Morgan large growth, Loomis sales growth, Putnam large growth. The expense ratios and manager tenures are all listed here. How much revenue they refund back to the plan is listed here. So we normally need to see a red flagged fund on a 6 and 12 month chart here shows signs of improvement, which AB is not. I think we've come to the point where we probably need to replace it. The question is how. You go a little further at 6 and 12 month, you're going to see something Kevin pointed out before, is nobody's really beating the benchmark on the 6 and 12 month. Because again, you can't just have three stocks in your portfolio, otherwise you're not a mutual fund. If we look at risk reward, Hero certainly earns its stripes by being more defensive, which pays off in down markets. AB, unfortunately, giving you about 88% of the good, but 100% of the bad. There are other funds a little bit better on the upside versus the downside capture, but nobody is really wowing you here on these pages because of the factors I've already described. So on the 3 and 5 year, you can certainly be excited by the Loomis sales numbers out here. But remember, when it's further out to the right, they're taking more risks than anybody else. So that should also be factored into our thinking. If you want funds that are closer to the benchmark, there are a couple. And then these active managers probably for the gross discovery, not really doing you a lot of good there in terms of incremental value. JP Morgan we use in a fair number of other retirement clients. But they're slightly under benchmark on 3 and 5 years. You know, this is a good committee because we don't give you any easy question. But what say you?
How long has it been on red flag?
Since January. Yeah, January.
So we can, for the policy, we can only either decide today or kick the can one more time.
Kick the can, but ideally, if we're kicking the can, it's showing signs of hope, which it's not. But yeah, I don't think we want to make it worse. So if we don't feel comfortable with any of the other choices, I would say with what we have. So.
I mean, But my concern is you and kind of Kevin pointed out, we pick any alternative other than the index, we're below our threshold on the 5-year chart for everything.
Yeah, we're almost violating our policy.
We're almost like, and you know, all but one of them non-index on the 3-year, you know, because of that issue you raised. So it's it better, but it's not still not meeting our metric.
Mm-hmm. Nobody is. So if you see here on that index fund, those top three stocks represent 36% of the benchmark. They also represent the size of small countries. So
yeah, all their portfolios are pretty similar.
NVIDIA is bigger than Germany now, by the way. So do we want to stay red flagged? We would, our hand would be forced in January. Gotta go unless it really shows a good 90-day improvement.
I don't think anything we're seeing here today gives us the clear winner. But I do anticipate a similar difficult decision in January.
I agree.
A drastic swing in markets.
Unlikely.
We may be forced to pick the best of the underperforming.
And is there one of these that provide a better deal to the consumer who, you know, owns it, like the ratio?
Good question. I think I wrote my notes on that.
So we did have to bail. Is there one that at least give you a better price?
Definitely. Usually I write this up, but I didn't see. I like growth discovery would be pretty good there.
I think that's probably the most cheapest one other than the index.
Yeah. So those Fidelity direct funds all refund 35. So that's pretty good on a 66 expense ratio. But Eric, that would be a definite improvement in cost. But net of that expense ratio, they're over here.
Right. So that doesn't help us. Is there another one that is a little bit better that would help us?
So Loomis sales is better on performance. They would be slightly better on price. Loomis sales, they've got the best 3-year, the best 4-year, but they do not have good recent performance. So I don't know. I wrote Loomis sales as the one to pick if you're going to pick one, but I don't feel super comfortable picking it.
I'm going to kick the can down and then have this discussion again.
I think so, too.
Deviate from policy. All right, again,
our hand is kind of forced, and we can make the decision, you know, hold your nose and pick the best active one that's there that may not perfectly meet our metric, or do we decide to move the index like we do in the other plan? I mean, I understand your argument. Not want to have a mirror image in both plans.
Right.
That category, we tried to avoid that. Maybe one fund overlaps, but not both.
Yeah, that's a little tough for me.
But I'm fine. Let's let this play all the way out as the policy lets us. And,
okay.
You know, make a decision when we have to.
All right. Does anybody feel the need to flag T Row?
Is it gray now?
It's nothing now. I think it needs to be at least gray.
I think it's gray. Looks like it's gray.
Oh, it's gray? My bad.
We should flag that.
Keep it, make it red?
Keep it green.
Red. We should red flag that based off what's on the sheet.
That was gray flag 1.
I mean, it's so just below.
Let me follow up a little bit on their question. Scott, for this one, the index is not the Russell 1000. The index for this one, the benchmark for this one, excuse me, is the Russell 3000.
In their own prospectus, it is, but in the metrics that we evaluated by, it's still the Russell 1000.
Okay. So it's underperforming with less risk.
Yeah. So Morningstar still puts it in the large growth category. We follow Morningstar on those where it's a debate.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
So it sounds like we should have a red flag for both these large growth funds after today, right?
And that makes sense too, because we're going to come back and discuss it,
yeah,
whether everyone has to go or not.
Because the next meeting is 401A focus, but this will be on the red flag list to look at.
My opinion is that would be consistent with what we're already doing with the other fund.
Okay.
Open discussion, of course.
Anybody back here have any secret solutions they want to share? All right.
Thanks for the challenge, Rita.
Thank you, everybody. All right. So that concludes our items for attention on the 457. Now, items for attention on the 401A. So remember, we talked about wanting to have a fund that focused on global commodities. We do. A lot of global commodity stock here. They look very good on the 5-year, not as good on the 3-year. You guys have looked at a lot of these EPRA reports over the years. You probably haven't seen a big of variance year by year. The individual years, as you see here in the bottom left of that page 77. So there's no consistent pattern, but that's because there's not really a clear benchmark in this category. We know what benchmarks are for a lot of these funds. But there's a lot of different variety in terms of holding. Like we said, there's already a subsector for water versus energy, et cetera, et cetera. So like 2022, our fund looked amazing. The category is down there up 20%, but then they flipped it the other year. The category is up and we were down. Then they flipped it back in 24. This year, everybody's making money, but the benchmark's making more. Morningstar still likes it. 4 stars in silver. It's top 37th percentile on the 1 year, but it's bottom third on the 3-year, it's top quarter on the 5-year, it's top quarter on the 10-year. The other thing to note is it does have a new manager. Manager is started in 2025. So there's no flag on this. We're just bringing it to your attention, partly because we were talking about water, but partly because you've got that underperformance. So if I switch to a 6 and 12 month, the 12 month is good. The 6 month is not. And if we look at other natural resources funds, saw all these before on the other page for the water comparison, but these are just looking at those more energy-focused and mining-focused natural resources funds. So there are some competitive things to consider here. Franklin looks pretty good. But I don't think we're at the point where we really want to replace something right here on the spot. Fidelity is not doing badly. It's just below its benchmark on the 3-year. And these are not big funds. Fidelity's less than $1 billion. BlackRock is $151 million. Franklin's $361 million. PGIM is $7 billion. So they're not big funds. Do we flag? Do we leave it as is? That's the question for you.
I think at a minimum, a gray flag would be appropriate to keep close tabs on this.
Okay.
I've heard my colleagues on that. The gray flag is sufficient, or we can go further, a red flag, or other alternatives. I'd be okay red flagging. I mean, it's 3 or 4 points below our standard on the 3-year chart. And recent performance has not been good. So I'd be fine going to the full red flag.
Dr. Wagan, you're the tiebreaker over here. What do you think?
I think gray is fine because then we can come back and look at it just to study what's going on.
We will look at it in depth.
Yeah, it just was kind of thumbing through what the options are in here. And most are, you know, oil and fuel heavy, except for one of them, which was in like this Jennison one, was more about mining. There were some, obviously, oil in there, but it seemed more heavy on other minerals, mines, mining.
Yeah, I saw
the
that
others were mostly Chevron, Shell, Exxon, Conoco. Right. Like those were, they're heavy, all of those except for that. So right. Just, you know, interesting to kind of look at. Obviously, it's a different industry, or it's supposed to be broad-based.
Right. I think
But
one of the challenges here is the index is covering so much.
it is.
And so that's one of the challenges. I think it might be behoove us to have some more education on maybe understanding the dynamics of that. So maybe it would be appropriate to grade flag this as a follow-up for next meeting and have some more education from you, Scott, on understanding this space a little bit better.
No problem.
Yeah, because I mean, minerals, mines, gold, that's the commodity market's booming. Is that good? It just kind of seems up and down and out of the realm of what we know. And then if you then just add Exxon into it, then it's like, wait, where are we going with this? It's very diversified, I guess, if you're in all of those things.
Okay. So the committee loves all this index analysis. Okay, good. So yeah, if you see on the Morningstar sheets, the sector weightings, as you were pointing out, Director, energy and materials. So 34% on our fund is in energy, 56% in materials. The bigger stocks, however, are energy companies like ExxonMobil and Chevron, just because they're so large. So BlackRock is a little bit more materials heavy than ours. Franklin is quite a bit more in materials. Prudential Denison is 39% of materials. But as you pointed out, a lot of the top 15 names are materials and mining stocks, not energy stocks. There's a lot of different ways to approach it, I think. All right,
How
so
many
we.
investors are in this?
55. Okay, so we have a great flag there. We've already figured out our mid blend. So some of the hard work's already done. Now we go into the 401A's large growth category. We have the very large cap growth index, which is keeping up with the benchmark. Now, Russell, T. Rowe Price, all cap. It just was flagged on the other side. So I'll save you any trouble and just say it must be red flagged here.
Sounds good.
Last but not least is large value. The JP Morgan Equity Income has been with us for many years, but a year ago, their manager retired. She had a very good track record over time. Over the last couple of years of her tenure, weren't great. Putnam is a great fund. It's not here for any issue. Just to point out what the other option is in this category. So Putnam is outperforming the benchmark. It's outperforming the JP Morgan fund. It's highly rated by Morningstar. We're happy with that as we could be. But just looking at the JP Morgan, it was gray flagged in the last meeting. Have we reached the point where we need to red flag it would be the question I would pose. So Putnam is 5 stars in bronze. They're top 12% on the 3-year, 5-year, and 10-year, so you can't beat that. JP Morgan is 3 stars, so not as good, but gold. So Morningstar actually likes their process better. I have been on conference calls with some of their manager teams. I do think they're good, but the numbers are not showing that. So bottom 20% on the 3-year, middle of the pack on the 1-year. They're 68th percentile, so bottom 2/3 on the 5-year. Their 10-year is still good in the top 30%. If you look at the 5-year chart, I think you can argue both of those are just fine. If you look at the 3-year chart, JP Morgan is a bit below because of their poor performance in 23 and 24. Putnam's beat the benchmark 5 out of 5 years, JP Morgan 3 out of 5 years. If I look at a 6 and 12 month chart, Putnam's certainly the better, but JP Morgan's pretty close. So we didn't have that luxury with some of these other reviews where the 6 and 12 months showed any signs of hope. I feel like the new team has had this ship for a year and they're kind of doing okay actually over the last year.
I think that warrants a red flag, but
I think you're right. But it is close enough that someone wanted to do so. I would.
maybe just maintain the gray. Since it's quite out of the woods, but showing some signs.
I like that.
It seems like banking is one of their things. So didn't that kind of get a little sideways for a little while there?
It's having a good year now, so. Banks like when the Fed is cutting, but longer rates aren't going down as much. So expands their spread.
That's the second highest or third highest, but pretty close to energy and utilities that it's in. So.
You're looking at the sector exposure. Yeah, so they have a double weight in financials. So it's 27% of the fund, but that's double the benchmark's amount. So that's a good spot. They're also double in energy, to your point, Eric. 1980, eight of the 10 companies that were the biggest in the United States were energy companies. Now energy is only 3% of the S&P.
These were all your dog ears were on this
yeah.
one here.
I'm good here.
Okay.
Let's just maintain grace.
Yeah. So that concludes my presentation. Are you comfortable reading back
sure.
all the decisions?
Actually, Scott, can we just, there are a couple on the consent. We just a couple questions about that.
Fire away.
Page 133. It's the foreign large broker.
Yeah, I can see that.
There you go. Any particular reason why you didn't call this for our review, given that it's below for both?
I don't know.
Three and five.
Anik, can you remind me what our thinking was here? Sorry to put you on the spot, but
traffic growth, I mean, the fund of growth is by selling the low and back through performance, but the performance on this kind of thing. But given the other side of the fund, we just have to bring it to be considered, which is the bottom line, but this is the much better fund.
Anita, that was a little tough to understand, so I don't know if you.
Sorry. Can you hear me now? Sorry about that. I was saying that we actually reviewed this and then the other funds in the categories were not doing great. And the fund itself is 5-star in silver. And the performance numbers are pretty good, like except for the 1-year numbers, everything else is middle of the pack or, you know, 16, 11 for the 10-year. So that is the reason why we didn't look or bring to the committee for the review itself.
Thank you, Anita. That's very helpful. So what you guys probably can't quite see, but ranking versus its peers on the 1-year, it's 51st percentile, 3-year, 37, 5-year, 16, 10-year, 11. So that kind of put it over the top, but it's another category where very few, if any, active managers are coming close to the benchmark. So, and it all seems to be tech related with Taiwan Semiconductor being their biggest holding, but the benchmark is going to have a lot of large cap tech in there. It's foreign large cap techs. So we can certainly gray or red flag it just based on what you're seeing, but that's why we didn't put it. You can still take action on it.
I would kind of like to be like great flag it just so maybe we can see it next time and maybe have a little, like with the other kind of little discussion of the benchmark and just kind of just see what the alternatives are. Given that it's just, it is below both of our threshold on everyone five.
Okay.
And then same thing on the Bar 57 mid blend, which is page 148 in our packet. Same question here.
Last time I looked at Touchstone, it's doing pretty well, so I'm all surprised. Any memories on that one?
This was the same thing, and especially because of the benchmarking, I think we just held off on this to gray flag it. Like this was the S&P Midcap 400 and Touchstone. Most of the time, it actually is Russell Midcap, but then it had a little style change, so it's between the growth and the value. So it's basically in a shift kind of a thing. So that's why I think we did not bring any alts to the desk.
Yeah, Touchstone has the great 23, but not much since then.
Yeah, right. And 21, 24, and year to date all aren't great
Okay.
against both benchmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would.
You can go red on that one.
Yeah.
Seems appropriate.
Okay. Yeah, I would support going red on this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So red it is.
Yeah, okay. So,
Fund 18 on the decision sheet, everybody. And Fund 10 is the gray flag and index review. Good.
sure, you want to have the
yeah.
feedback?
Are you good to go? Yeah.
47 items for review: T. Rowe Price, red flag; Principal Midcap, S&P 400. We're going to keep with the direction to change benchmark as allowed in the policy. AB Large Cap Growth and T. Rowe Price, both red flag. Good so far. 401 items for review: Fidelity Global. We're going to gray flag. And Principal Midcap, we're going to keep. T. Rowe Price, red flag, and New Day Premium Equity, we're going to maintain gray flag. And MFS International Growth, gray flag. And Touchstone Midcap Y, red flag.
Got it. I'll make a motion to approve those changes.
Okay.
I'll second that motion. All
right, I have a motion and a second. Any directors online wish to comment? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote.
Roll call, Director Wygant?
Yes.
Director Mezquit? Director Mezquit?
I'm here. I'm trying to unmute. Yes, I'm a yes.
You.
I have to check off. I apologize after this. Is there anything? Will you have a quorum if I leave?
Yes.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Director Wynn? Director Wynn? Director Jung? Director Meeks?
Yes.
Thank you.
Everyone else red flagged themselves.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Kevin O'Toole?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Okay, awesome. I will direct these items to be agendized on the consent calendar for our upcoming November 5th board meeting. Any announcements or reports from anyone? Seeing none, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all for participating. Good work.
Okay.